The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kenny Park Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service.
And this is the April 2024 edition of Education Today. This article comes from the New York Times, and it's titled, Why School Absences Have Exploded Almost Everywhere. The pandemic changed families' lives and the culture of education. Our relationship with school became optional. By Sarah Mirvosh and Francesca Paris. In Anchorage, affluent families set off on ski trips and other lengthy vacations with the assumption that their children can keep up with schoolwork online. In a working-class pocket of Michigan, school administrators have tried almost everything, including pajama day, to boost student attendance. And across the country, students with heightened anxiety are opting to stay home rather than face the classroom. In the 4 years since the pandemic closed schools, U.S. education has struggled to recover on a number of fronts, from learning loss to enrollment to student behavior. But perhaps no issue has been as stubborn and pervasive as a sharp increase in student absenteeism, a problem that cuts across demographics and has continued long after schools reopened. Nationally, an estimated 26% of public school students were considered chronically absent last school year, up from 15% before the pandemic, according to the most recent data, from 40 states and Washington, D.C., compiled by the conservative-leaning American Enterprise Institute. Chronic absence is typically defined as missing at least 10% of the school year, or about 18 days, for any reason. The increases have occurred in districts big and small, and across income and race. For districts in wealthier areas, chronic absenteeism rates have about doubled to 19% in the 2022-2023 school year, from 10% before the pandemic, a New York Times analysis of the data found. Poor communities, which started with elevated rates of student absenteeism, are facing an even bigger crisis. Around 32% of students in the poorest districts were chronically absent in the 2022-2023 school year, up from 19% before the pandemic. Even districts that reopened quickly during the pandemic in fall 2020 have seen vast increases. The problem got worse for everybody in the same proportional way, said Nat Malkus, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, who collected and studied the data.
The trends suggest that something fundamental has shifted in American childhood and the culture of school in ways that may be long-lasting. What was once a deeply ingrained habit, wake up, catch the bus, report to class, is now something far more tenuous. Our relationship with school became optional, said Katie Rosenbaum, a psychologist and associate research professor with the Center for Child and Family Policy at Duke University. The habit of daily attendance, and many families' trust, was severed when schools shuttered in spring 2020. Even after schools reopened, things hardly snapped back to normal. Districts offered remote options, required COVID-19 quarantines, and relaxed policies around attendance and grading. Today, student absenteeism is a leading factor hindering the nation's recovery from pandemic learning losses, educational experts say. Students can't learn if they aren't in school. And a rotating cast of absent classmates can negatively affect the achievement of even students who do show up, because teachers must slow down and adjust their approach to keep everyone on track. If we don't address the absenteeism, then all is not, said Adam Clark, the superintendent of Mount Diablo Unified, a socioeconomically and racially diverse district of 29,000 students in Northern California, where he said absenteeism has exploded to about 25% of students. That's up from 12% before the pandemic. Why students are missing school? Schools everywhere are scrambling to improve attendance, but the new calculus among families is complex and multifaceted. At South Anchorage High School in Anchorage, where students are largely white and middle to upper income, some families now go on ski trips during the school year or take advantage of off-peak travel deals to vacation for 2 weeks in Hawaii, said Sarah Miller, a counselor at the school. For a smaller number of students at the school who qualify for free or reduced price lunch, the reasons are different and more intractable. They often have to stay home to care for younger siblings, Ms. Miller said. On days they miss the bus, their parents are busy working or do not have a car to take them to school. And because teachers are still expected to post classwork online, often nothing more than a skeleton version of an assignment, families incorrectly think students are keeping up, Ms. Miller said. Across the country, Students are staying home when sick, not only with COVID-19, but also with more routine colds and viruses. And more students are struggling with their mental health. One reason for increased absenteeism in Mason, Ohio, an affluent suburb of Cincinnati, said Tracy Carson, a district spokeswoman. Because many parents can work remotely, their children can also stay home. For Ashley Cooper, 31, of San Marcos, Texas, the pandemic fractured her trust in an education system that she said left her daughter to learn online, with little support, and then expected her to perform on grade level upon her return. Her daughter, who fell behind in math, has struggled with anxiety ever since, she said. There have been days where she's been absolutely in tears. Can't do it. Mom, I don't want to go, said Ms. Cooper, who has worked with the nonprofit communities and schools to improve her children's school attendance. But she added, as a mom, I feel like it's okay to have a mental health day, to say, I hear you and I listen. You are important. Experts say missing school is both a symptom of pandemic-related challenges and also a cause. Students who are behind academically may not want to attend, but being absent sets them further back. Anxious students may avoid school, but hiding out can fuel their anxiety. And schools have also seen a rise in discipline problems since the pandemic, an issue intertwined with absenteeism. Dr. Roseanne Baum, the Duke psychologist, said both absenteeism and behavioral outbursts are examples of the human stress response, now playing out en masse in schools. Fight, verbal or physical aggression, or flight, absenteeism. Quentin Shepard, the superintendent in Victoria, Texas, first put his focus on student behavior, which he described as a fire in the kitchen, after schools reopened in August 2020. The district, which serves a mostly low-income and Hispanic student body of around 13,000, found success with a one-on-one coaching program that teaches coping strategies to the most disruptive students. In some cases, students went from having 20 classroom outbursts per year to fewer than 5, Dr. Shepard said. But chronic absenteeism is yet to be conquered. About 30% of students are chronically absent this year, roughly double the rate before the pandemic. Dr. Shepard, who originally hoped student absenteeism would improve naturally with time, has begun to think that it is, in fact, at the root of many issues. If kids are not here, they are not forming relationships, he said. If they are not forming relationships, we should expect there will be behavior and discipline issues. If they are not here, they will not be academically learning and they will struggle. If they struggle with their coursework, you can expect violent behaviors. Teacher absences have also increased since the pandemic, and student absences mean less certainty about which friends and classmates will be there. That can lead to more absenteeism, said Michael A. Gottfried, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania Graduate School of Education. His research has found that when 10% of a student's classmates are absent on a given day, that student is more likely to be absent the following day. Is this the new normal? In many ways, the challenge facing schools is one felt more broadly in American society. Have the cultural shifts from the pandemic become permanent? In the workforce, U.S., employees are still working from home at a rate that has remained largely unchanged since late 2022. Companies have managed to, quote, put the genie back in the bottle to some extent by requiring a return to office a few days a week, said Nicholas Bloom, an economist at Stanford University who studies remote work. But hybrid office culture, he said, appears here to stay. Some wonder whether it is time for schools to be more pragmatic. Lakeisha Young, the chief executive of the Oakland Reach, a parent advocacy group that works with low-income families in California, suggested a rigorous online option that students could use in emergencies, such as when a student misses the bus or has to care for a family member. The goal should be, how do I ensure this kid is educated? She said. In the corporate world, companies have found some success appealing to a sense of social responsibility, where colleagues rely on each other to show up on the agreed-upon days. A similar dynamic may be at play in schools, where experts say strong relationships are critical for attendance. There is a sense of, if I don't show up, would people even miss the fact that I'm not there? Said Charlene M. Russell Tucker, the commissioner of education in Connecticut. In her state, a home visit program has yielded positive results, in part by working with families to address the specific reasons a student is missing school, but also by establishing a relationship with a caring adult. Other efforts, such as sending text messages or postcards to parents informing them of the number of accumulated absences, can also be effective.
And we'll have to cut that article short for time. The next article comes from Education Week, and it's titled, Lazy, Anxious, Overlooked? Teachers Sound Off on Unmotivated Students, by Tanyan A. Dupree, posted April 11th, 2024. Labeling students who don't do their work and seem unmotivated as lazy has transcended generations in the classroom. As time has gone on and social science research has gotten more advanced, it's clear that there's many factors at play. Technological advancement, a pandemic, and an educational system under stress have only further complicated the question of what drives student apathy. In a recent EdWeek opinion piece, Kyle Kopps, a secondary school principal at an international school in Germany, wrote about the nuances of student laziness. In response to the article, many teachers felt inspired to share their own opinions on the topic. Some agreed that what seems like laziness is often a symptom of another problem. Others insist that sometimes students just don't put in the effort that's needed. Here's a collection of the most popular themes from what they had to say. The success of classrooms reflects the system. As an educational psychologist, I strongly agree, but it is not the fault of the teacher. Schools are a mirror of society. From Edward M. The education system, or at least where I teach, is primarily responsible for creating the lazy child. Maybe lazy isn't the word we need to be looking at, but rather the unmotivated child. By Anita D. I appreciate the philosophy brought into the argument. Furthermore, I very much want to believe the idea here, but this requires a much more practical follow-up question. If the reason students appear lazy, but are not, is that educators are not addressing other issues, how are administrators, school boards, and others in charge of school policy going to change to allow students to get their needs met? By Nathan B. What if this apathy is a result of the school system itself? By Colby L. And then a new subsection, the issue is nuanced. I can understand my students are avoiding the content by doing many of the things they are doing. I can understand why they are avoiding the content, because they avoided the content during COVID and now can't handle the content before them. By JV. I agree there's usually reasons behind behaviors that appear to be laziness. Unfortunately, many of the times the classroom teacher has little to no control over many of the factors contributing to that. Family issues, lack of food at home, student mental health problems, etc. This is why student support in terms of counselors, psychologists, and social workers are needed. By Gabrielle M. You only have to listen, as students tend to know it's self-inflicted sleep deprivation from texting, surfing, online games, and chats. They start their homework after midnight, 2 a.m., and then have to get up at 7 to 8 a.m. to make it to school. All this from a group that needs more quality sleep than almost any other age bracket. By Janelle W. Always look further into what is going on with your students. Don't ever just label them lazy and move on. Just like I always try and look when the behavior is defiant, 99% of the time the kid is crying for help, attention, love, etc. I am not doing my students justice to just label them defiant and move on. However, in this case, there is still that 1% that is just downright defiant because they want to be. By Jamie G. I totally agree with this, and honestly, the first person to tell you kids are lazy are the kids themselves. It's only the four-letter word totally banned in my classroom. There's a reason behind their lack of motivation. Uncover the reason, address the problem, work gets done. I have spent a lot of my career with kids with school anxiety and avoidance. A lot of teachers just don't get it. By Wendy W. It is true that knowing one's students, truly knowing them, helps immensely. But there are some factors at work right now that are totally student laziness. By Paul B. It's not about blame. Mindset is the invisible aspect of teaching practice that guides how we respond to students and how they see us. When we label, even subconsciously, a student, they know it. When we bypass the inactions and speak to the function of their behavior, we can actually move mountains. By Joanne O. Do principals understand what teachers face? I'm curious how long this principal was a teacher. We are seeing less and less time in the classroom from administrators. Experience doesn't mean expertise, but it is one of the requirements for it. By Crystal L. This person has clearly been out of the classroom for the past 40 years, and most likely spends all of their days in their office hiding from actual responsibility. By Hamlet J. And we'll have to cut that article short for time. The next article comes from the Washington Post, and it's titled, Under Budget Pressure, D.C. Public Schools May Eliminate 200 Positions, by Lauren Lumpkin, posted April 14, 2024.
Deal Middle School is bracing for another year of growth. The Northwest Washington campus is projected to have 48 new students and an extra $981,000 in its budget next year. District budget data shows. So when staff found out they may also have to eliminate 13 positions, they were shocked, said Michael Donaldson, a Spanish teacher. That wasn't something that they expected to happen, he said. It's a scenario playing out in schools across D.C., from the wealthiest swaths to the most impoverished communities. Democratic Mayor Muriel E. Bowser's $21 billion budget request calls for a 12% increase to the funding formula that largely determines how schools are funded, a proposal that would infuse traditional public schools with an additional $181 million. But it's not enough to stave off cuts. Officials say a perfect storm of factors, including flat revenue for the city, higher teacher salaries, rising costs, and the expiration of millions of dollars in one-time federal pandemic aid, means that dollars won't stretch as far as they have in the past. While the D.C. Council still must approve the budget, school leaders are bracing for 200 fewer full-time equivalent school-based positions, from classroom teachers to janitors. Most of the losses will be among teachers, and the cuts in some of D.C.'s most underserved neighborhoods will be particularly deep, budget data shows. The reductions represent just 2% of people who work in schools, but come as families say children need more help recovering from the pandemic. Donaldson warned the next school year could usher in bigger class sizes and less time for teachers to plan lessons. That, he said, could make it difficult to maintain the academic gains his students are making. Deal is losing 6 teachers, as well as behavioral counselors who were hired to help sort through new habits that students started showing after virtual learning, like roaming the hallways instead of going to class, he said. We set our schools up for success and stability, knowing what we need to have things be successful, to make the school environment a place where kids can learn and thrive and feel safe and all those things, Donaldson said. It's almost like that was pulled right from under us. The proposed staff cuts will affect schools in almost every part of the city. Ward 3 schools, including Deal, will have 64 fewer full-time positions next year, data shows. Ward 4, which has the city's largest traditional public school enrollment, will lose 47. Wards 2 and 5 are the only parts of the city that will see net gains. Most schools will lose at least one position. It's unclear how many of these losses include current vacancies. That is something we're reconciling now, said Louis D. Farabee, chancellor of the school system. Ward 8, which contains some of D.C.'s most under-resourced neighborhoods, could lose the most staff, according to a review of the budget proposal. Enrollment in traditional public schools in the ward fell by 634 students between the 2018-19 and 2021-22 school years, then ticked up, but is now projected to drop by 324 students next year, according to projections. Almost all schools in the ward will eliminate positions next year for a net loss of 99 roles. Taisha Andrews, a Ward 8 resident, said many children, including her own, would rather attend school in other parts of the city. The majority of the students in the city come from Wards 7 and 8, and they travel to other wards to get a better education, Andrews said. Ward 8 is the last ward that deserves cuts in funding. Andrews's oldest son, a high schooler, is interested in technology, and there aren't tech-focused traditional public schools in their neighborhood. And she refuses to send her youngest son to his neighborhood school because of nearby violence. She said deeper investments in specialized programs and safety might entice more families to stay. Farabee said the city is continuing to invest in microtransit options for students and Safe Passage, a program that places adults in high-traffic areas around schools to watch out for violence. Several factors determine how much money a school gets. Enrollment growth typically means more funding, because money is allocated to schools based on the number of students who attend. School budgets are also determined by programming, such as how many children need special education services. Schools also get extra funding for children who are learning English and students who are at risk, a broad term the city uses to describe kids who are homeless or in foster care, live in low-income homes, and high schoolers who have been held back at least 1 year. The city has also provided stability funding to some schools to help maintain staffing or other resources when enrollment fluctuates. Schools got $65 million between the 2022-23 and 2023-24 school years, and that funding will drop to $11 million in next year's budget as one-time funds run out. Because we don't have the one-time funding that we've had to hold schools at what they had the year before, you are naturally going to see some reductions, Farabee said. If your enrollment was decreasing and you still have the same number of staff, that cliff that you now have is going to be steeper. You've got more to right-size because you've been funded at a level of students that have no longer been in your building. Meanwhile, schools, flush with temporary federal pandemic aid and in need of more staff to administer coronavirus tests or hold small group lessons for students, hired fast. The number of full-time positions across the district has grown by 18% since the pandemic, Farabee said. Meanwhile, enrollment has inched up by about 3% since the 2020-21 school year. DCPS received $304 million in federal pandemic aid. We knew, though, at that time, that we couldn't sustain that level of increase in perpetuity, Farabee said about the new hires. The challenge of this moment is, we're now there where we're phasing out the last elements of that investment. School districts across the country took similar approaches, said Marguerite Rosa, director of the Edunomics Lab, an education think tank at Georgetown University. Nationwide, schools in 47 states grew their staffs by nearly 5% between the 2016-17 and 2022-23 school years, data shows. By contrast, enrollment over that period slumped by almost 2%. In some cases, new staffers were told their jobs were temporary, Rosa said. Many district leaders hoped state legislatures or the federal government would inject more funding so they wouldn't have to get rid of staff. Now schools are facing layoffs, the elimination of programs, and even school closures. In D.C., the proposed cuts have been criticized by education advocates, who argue that schools need more, not fewer, staff members. The plan also sets up another showdown between the mayor and chancellor against the D.C. Council, which passed a law in 2022 designed to make sure schools get at least the same amount of money in their budgets as they did the year prior. This is the second year in a row that Bowser has flouted that law. Farabee said the budget model the district continues to use is more equitable. He pointed to an Edunomics analysis that found the current formula is better at directing funds to students with the highest needs than a previous model the school district used in 2019. D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson, Democrat, however, said that analysis does not take into account the funding model prescribed in the council's 2022 law. He said he intends to propose more funding to bring school budgets into compliance like he did last year. Meanwhile, teachers are already looking for jobs elsewhere. Aikisha Butler, a special education teacher at Sousa Middle School in Southeast Washington, said some of her colleagues have started attending job fairs.
And we'll have to cut that article short for time. The next article comes from K-12 Dive, and it's titled, 23% of teachers experienced a gun-related school lockdown in 2022 to 2023. Published April 12, 2024, by Anna Merid.
Dive Brief. Nearly one in four teachers, 23%, said they experienced a gun-related lockdown at school in 2022-23, according to a Pew Research Center survey released Thursday, with 15% reporting a lockdown happened once and 8% saying they went through more than one lockdown. Overall, 60% of teachers said their school did an excellent or very, or good, job at preparing for a potential active shooter, Pew found. However, 39% said their schools did a fair or poor job at providing teachers with training and resources to deal with such a situation. A majority of teachers are at least somewhat worried that a school shooting could occur, Pew said. When it comes to preventing school shootings, 69% of surveyed educators said improving mental health screening and care for children and adults would be extremely or very effective. Dive Insight. The psychological toll of school shootings continues to loom over classrooms, as illuminated by the Pew survey of over 2,500 public K-12 teachers conducted between October and November. The findings come as school shootings reached a record high in 2023. On top of that, threats against schools increased 60% between 2021 and 2022, according to the FBI. These threats are often made anonymously, and most were posted on social media, according to a recent report by RAND Corp. Due to a lack of national or state-level protocols for responding to threats made on social media, handling these concerns is even more difficult for schools, RAND said. This, the report suggests, makes it increasingly crucial that schools establish a multidisciplinary process that taps into school staff, law enforcement, and psychologists when investigating social media-based threats. On the prevention front, the White House announced Thursday a final rule from the Department of Justice that expands firearm background checks under the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act of 2022. The White House stated that the rule will help close loopholes in the U.S. background check system that have previously allowed school shooters and other assailants to illegally acquire firearms.
And we'll have to cut that article short for time. The final article comes from NBC News, and it's titled, Biden announces more than $7 billion in student debt relief for 277,000 borrowers. With its latest move, the administration has canceled $153 billion in debt for 4.3 million borrowers, the White House said. Posted April 12, 2024, by Rebecca Shabbat. President Joe Biden announced Friday that his administration is canceling $7.4 billion in student loans for 277,000 borrowers. The White House said the latest round of relief helps borrowers enrolled in the Saving on a Valuable Education, or SAVE, repayment plan, as well as those in income-driven repayment or public service loan forgiveness plans. On the SAVE plan, an income-driven repayment plan that took effect last summer, the new policy will allow those who took out smaller loans to have the debt canceled more quickly, the Education Department said. With its latest move, the administration has now canceled $153 billion for 4.3 million Americans, the White House said. Today's announcement comes on top of the significant progress we've made for students and borrowers over the past 3 years, Biden said in a statement. That includes providing the largest increase to the maximum Pell Grant in over a decade, fixing public service loan forgiveness so teachers, nurses, police officers, and other public service workers get the relief they are entitled to under the law, and holding colleges accountable for taking advantage of students and families. And we'll have to cut that article short for time.
We've run out of time for this episode of Education Today. Please be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kenny Park Yee for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Education Today is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.